Thanks for listening to the Best of the Doug Gottlieb Show podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday from 3 to 6 p.m. Eastern Time. That's 12 to 3 Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. Find your local station for the Doug Gottlieb Show at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching FSR.
This is the Best of the Doug Gottlieb Show on Fox Sports Radio.
Boom! What up, America? Doug Gottlieb Show. Fox Sports Radio. You know, I like to start off this show every day, right? We're broadcasting from beautiful, sunny Southern California. We're lathering. I mean, just rub it in. I've noticed strange substance falling from the sky. Kind of wet. I believe the rest of the country calls it rain. We're really not sure what to do with it. Hope you're having a great day. Maybe it's the gods crying over the Dodgers losing, which of course breaks the heart of Jason Stewart and John Ramos. Maybe it's the football gods crying over what's happened to the Kansas City Chiefs. This created from above, unbelievable watch of a football team. Maybe that's what it is. Or maybe it's the football gods crying over a couple of those ridiculous taunting penalties called this weekend, specifically in college football. Maybe that's what it is. Or maybe it's like we're told once in a century sort of storm, which, I don't know, to me, the most amazing part of last night's Sunday night football game, where people are lining up in twos, it's raining so much, is that there's no mud, right? Like, again, I don't know what your background is. Full disclosure, I was in Wisconsin. We were in New York for a year. Then we moved out to Southern California in 81 and was here my whole childhood. I played football from 7 years old till 14 years old in high school. I chose to specialize. But the most fun you would ever have in the Southern California high school football practice was the day it rained or the day after it rained. And you would do any drill, Oklahoma drill or otherwise, as close to a mud puddle as possible. Matter of fact, this is a true story. It started with me and my brother, and then I would even do it after my brother matriculated to high school, which is, love playing in the mud so much. My backyard I grew up in, Orange, California, had sod in the backyard. Not sod now, it's kind of a mess now. But anyway, used to turn on the sprinklers for like 20 minutes, and then, hey, let's go play one-on-one tackle football. Why? Because there's mud. I'm watching last night. There's no mud.
Well, you know, Doug, that the new football fields have this sand underneath, and they have perfect drainage system.
I don't care. No mud. The Colts, a dome team playing in a deluge, their jerseys were as white as the driven snow. I wasn't ready for all of that. All right, let's get to the topic of the day, which happens to be the topic du jour. It's Doug Gottlieb Show here on Fox Sports Radio. What in the living heck is going on with the Kansas City Chiefs? It's one thing to be beaten by the Tennessee Titans, a team that has been openly disrespected, not just by the Chiefs and the Chiefs fans, but really by most of us in football. Like, hey, they're a cute little cuddly story. They run the football. They get to the playoffs and then, right? And then they kind of no-showed week one against the Arizona Cardinals at the time. We're like, dude, the Cardinals, really? Now you're like, well, the Cardinals are kind of good. They're like, I don't know, maybe the best team in football. And the Titans weren't good then, but they figured it out. What a week for the Titans. I feel gross in saying this, but pretty good weekend for Clay Travis, right? He's a Braves guy. And a Titans guy, it's so much more fun when all of his teams lose. It's just way more fun. Then there's just a complete meltdown. Anyway, what's happened to the Kansas City Chiefs? It's funny, you know, a couple years ago, I shared the information that I was told by the Chicago Bears in why they chose to pass on Pat Mahomes. They took a good long look, right? Took a good long look at Pat Mahomes. And the reason is, in all honesty, what we've seen so far this year. Right? The ceiling was higher than anybody they felt like in the draft and maybe anybody that they evaluated. But the floor was low because, look, his team now is a lot like a Texas Tech team when he played for Cliff Kingsbury. Not a particularly good defense, couldn't run the football, had some dudes who could catch, and they threw it for a bunch of yards. And he just get back there, and the fundamentals break down, and you feel like you got to take some chances. And look, now he's leading the league in interceptions. He also fumbled. He nearly got decapitated yesterday. I mean, it was a complete and utter dismantling of the Kansas City Chiefs. And again, we can say, hey, their defense stinks. Fair. How many points they have at half? They didn't have any. Right? And last time I checked in football, when they score, they kick it off to you and you get it for as long as you can keep it, right? So I'm not telling you that Pat Mahomes is the biggest problem or a huge, you know, but this was some of the fear. Some of the fear. Here's Andy Reid and the issues his team has.
The obvious, I think, is what you guys can see, and that's got to be fixed. If it's fixed, you have a chance to win every football game. If it's not fixed, then you're going to struggle. I can only tell you that we all need to get better on this. It's always good to get after the quarterback or get after, you know, a specific area. It's not one thing right now. There's a handful or two handfuls of things that we've got to get straight.
He's absolutely right. Of course, he's understanding of what some of the narrative is, but it's not fair to simply place all of the blame on line, on running game, on defense, when you have a guy who was anointed as a surefire first ballot Hall of Famer, arguably the best quarterback to ever spin a football, and look at his success in his second, third, and fourth year in the league, and go in his fifth year, he should be better, and they're actually worse. Here's Pat Mahomes.
You never go into a game expecting to lose, but lose bad. Definitely, you get shocked because you didn't play the way you wanted to. We have enough leaders on this team. We have to find a way. I mean, I don't know what that's going to take yet. We'll go in. We'll talk about it. We'll figure it out. We'll watch the film. But I trust that we'll find it. That's what's part of leadership. That's what part of great teams are, is being able to battle through adversity. And it's been kind of rainbows and flowers and awesome for these last few years. But whenever you want to build something substantial and you want to build something great, you're going to go through parts like this.
It's fair. Totally fair. It's funny, you have people, you know, I saw, I think it was Michael Irvin on TV earlier today say, you know, the dynasty is over. And it's interesting, like, was it really a dynasty? Two Super Bowls, one AFC championship game, which they're one play away, one penalty call, offsides away, maybe from going to three straight Super Bowls. We also don't know if they went to the first Super Bowl, if they would have gone to the second Super Bowl, and if they went to two straight Super Bowls, if they would have gone to the third Super Bowl. Like, there is a certain, it's what it's called, butterfly effect, right? If one happens to the rest, we don't know. But I've sat in this chair at three different networks, and I've seen it called time and again. Young team wins championship at the infancy of what could be a dynasty, and we have expectations of a dynasty, and you start to figure out, holy crap, it's really hard to win it every year. Because the best players want to be paid like the best players, and they've gotten away with some things because they're the best players. And if you don't have a very, very, very special front office, a very, very, very special owner, a very, very special quarterback, these are the type of things that happen. I think what happens to the Chiefs is going to be fascinating. But what's happened to them so far is the roster's not as good. The competition's come a-calling. But his play hasn't been nearly good enough. And the fears of the floor, not that he can't play, not that he can't throw, not that he can't move, not that he can't read it and see it. The fears are, this is who he is. And unless, and you want to let Pat Mahomes have some creativity, but what he's gotten away with can be low percentage. It's no different than Steph Curry, right? And the stuff you're able to get away with, which makes you popular and famous, the contested jump shots, the behind-the-back passes, that stuff, there's a lot of risk involved. There's a reason that for years, coaches would say, hey, don't throw across your body when you're rolling to your right. Then, of course, he throws across his body, and he's successful with it. So, of course, he thinks, I can do this anytime. Only you can't. The whole thing is a fascinating exercise in watching early success and how they deal with success. I don't think Pat Mahomes is a particularly arrogant guy, but anyone who's told that they are Jesus Christ in cleats is going to get a little bit of a God complex and think, don't worry, fellas, I can fix it. And you know what? Go and look at Tom Brady. Go and look at Aaron Rodgers. Go and look, until maybe last year, at Russell Wilson. Do you know what they all have in common statistically? They don't turn the football over. The number one determinant in who wins and who loses football games and basketball games. The number one thing you can track is just turnovers. Doesn't mean you want him to be Alex Smith and check down Charlie, but Alex Smith, despite the fact he doesn't have nearly the talent of Pat Mahomes and could not reach the ceiling of Pat Mahomes, his teams, once they figured out in San Francisco and in Kansas City, consistently won. Why? Because singles and doubles win more games than home runs. All right, speaking of singles and doubles, we got a lot to get to. It's Doug Gottlieb Show here on Fox Sports Radio. I think this is amazing. I really think this is amazing. I sent out a tweet after the Dodgers lost, right? And former All-Stars, potential Hall of Famers, baseball analysts, writers, reporters. It is literally a tweet over my thoughts on why the Dodgers lost, and wait till you hear how it's kind of set the Twitter world a little bit on fire. Tell you if I take it back.
Fox Sports Radio has the best sports talk lineup in the nation. Catch all of our shows at foxsportsradio.com and within the iHeartRadio app.
Doug Gottlieb Show, Fox Sports Radio. Ramos, question for you. Who's Jane?
It's a great question. I don't know. I know Perry Farrell's a lead singer. That I do know.
It wasn't the question.
No, I know it wasn't the question.
You're trying to fill time with an answer
time
to something that, like, you just, I don't know is okay.
Yeah, I said I don't know the first time.
Okay. Jay Stu, do you know what Jane's addiction actually is?
I have no idea.
Okay. Me either. Great name for a band, right?
You know.
It's a great name for a band.
You don't know?
What their addiction is?
No, Jane's addiction.
I know what the band is.
No, I do too. But I mean, you don't know what Jane's addiction, like why their name is. Okay.
Do you?
I don't, but I thought you were going to give us the answer.
No.
Okay. I thought he was going to give
you
us the answer.
You thought it was Doug showing off?
No.
Doing my Cliff Clavin? You know, Jane's addiction. It goes back to 1974 when Jane Fonda was on TV. Her addiction was workouts. Then she had the Jane Fonda workout tape. Anybody know what who Jane is and what her addiction is? Feel free at Gottlieb Show. That would be very cool for you to share this.
By the way, I thought when you came out and asked John about that, about the music, I thought you were asking him if that was an ode to the Astros making the World Series.
Been caught stealing?
Yeah. Was it, John?
It was. That's not what I had. No. That was just a song I play on. It's one of Doug's songs. That's all.
It's one of Doug's songs.
Yeah.
There we go. I do think we should start having theme days.
It's your show, man. You just tell me what you want, and I'll do it.
That requires extra work, and you know me with extra work.
John would love to do that, though. Honestly, he would.
Stop it.
He loves the
musical stuff.
Yeah. Well, John pays attention to the show quite intently, so he likes to take something that you say, and then maybe play it back in bumper music.
By the way, apparently Jane was Perry Farrell's housemate. Jane Banter.
Okay.
Who was their muse and inspiration. And they threw in Jane's heroin experience. Heroin was her addiction.
Okay. Well, that's a great... That heroin's not great.
Yes.
But... but...
Dun, 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 dun.
Listen, John Ramos was relieved of his duties at Fox Sports Radio because he said heroin was great.
It wouldn't
now
shock
back
me.
To your news.
It wouldn't shock me, by the way.
Wouldn't shock me what? If you got fired?
Yeah, because of like
No, because you're completely replaceable. That's I'm teasing you. I'm teasing. No, nobody's going to misconstrue what you said. Speaking of misconstrue what is said. So Tom Brady threw his 600th touchdown pass, not in a game. That would be an insurmountable record, although 600 in a career is an insurmountable record. No one will surmount that. But I thought this was interesting. This was what Tom Brady said about the ball who Mike Evans, his star wide receiver, handed to a fan.
It's really cool. I got it in the bag over there. So Mike gave it away. He goes, man, I'm sorry, man. I get it. I said, sorry. I'm sure they'll figure out a way to get it back. He's going to get something nice in return. So we'll get him a helmet or a couple jerseys or some other stuff. So it was really cool of him to do that.
Okay, I want you to listen to something. This is Tony Romo, who's on the call of the game.
Great negotiations in NFL history.
Right here. He's like, we need that ball. That's 600. What? Really? So what do you want? A million? No. Oh, a day with Giselle, and I'm in. Tom? Okay, Tom will do it. He'll love it. One time, you got it.
It was an indecent proposal, but there were hints of indecent proposal in it. So now, there was a movie that you're like, do not take your wife or girlfriend to that movie. Don't put it on Netflix. Don't put it on Amazon. There is no win there. No, baby, I wouldn't know. No chance. No chance. Like, we're in debt. Well, I mean, if you're okay with it, then like, no, there's no, do not have that conversation. That is a conversation which is always going to end poorly. Always going to end with you on the couch. Always going to end with you on the couch. But there were some that were like bothered by Romo's joke. Jason?
Yeah, I mean, the reaction on Twitter was like, oh, it's cool that Tony Romo's pimping out Tom Brady's wife. And, you know, Mike Freeman was like, I didn't find that funny at all. You know,
Mike Freeman doesn't find anything funny.
Exactly.
No, he doesn't find anything funny. Everything's offensive. Everything's offensive and probably racially based. Would they say that if Giselle was not white? She's Brazilian still. She's white, right? Like, that feels like where we go with it. It was funny. Like, he wasn't really pimping out his wife, although a date with Giselle would probably be a deal breaker.
And I'll say this, everybody's mind goes straight to the gutter. What about if it's just a dinner date?
Just dinner.
Yeah, that's all it was. Everybody.
Just lunch? Was that website? It's just lunch.
Roger that.
It's just lunch. Right? He didn't say, okay, so dinner and no. Netflix and no. Uh-uh. And by the way, he didn't even mean it. He was just being silly. Why? We can't even be silly anymore? The only guy who has the right to be offended would be Tom Brady. And I'm guessing that Tom and Tony are pretty good because, well, Tony seems to sure know a lot about the offense that Tom's running as opposed to some other offenses. My guess is they're close. They're boys. They text. It's funny. Some things are just funny. Just funny. Just, I'm going to have to help you. Not everything is offensive. Some things are just funny. You know what's funny? I watched Dave Chappelle's old and new, or the last two comedy skits, right? I mean, comedy specials on Netflix. Watched them both last night, back to back. And, of course, some of his comments about the LGBTQ plus community have, you know, there are people like trying to get him canceled. And it's like a who are you siding with thing. Did you watch, Ramos, did you watch his special? Not this one, the previous one?
I didn't watch the previous one, but I did watch the new one.
Okay.
Yeah.
The old one, the first joke was about Anthony Bourdain committing suicide. It was a suicide joke, right? Where he said, you know, Anthony Bourdain and the greatest life TV show, flew around the world, great meals, interesting people, beautiful apartment in Manhattan. He's like, this man is incredibly respected and accomplished, committed suicide. And then he tells a story about a guy he knew from high school, down in his luck, 45 years old, manager at Foot Locker, never thought of suicide. It's a very, very funny way of kind of maybe helping you understand suicide is not about what you've accomplished. It's more about where you are in your mental health. It's actually a kind of reasonable joke where if you really look into it, he gets it and he teaches people about it. But that's not the point. The point is there were no protests or cancels or whatever about a suicide joke, which is a massive problem across all races, creeds, and sexual orientations. It's just weird to me on how we pick and choose something we hear that we don't like. Like, dude is a comedian. Now, Tony Romo's not a comedian, but he's supposed to entertain. And that was entertaining. That's like the best thing Romo does is the old, right? Like the yakety yak, if you will. Did you like the new Chappelle special?
I did. You know, I just got into Chappelle in the last like 5 years. I knew he had his show. People would always talk about it. I never watched it. And then, you know, I love comedy. My dad was a big Richard Pryor fan.
Sure.
He loved
my
Pryor.
My dad used to kick me out of kick me out of the house. Us out of the house on a Sunday. He put on a Richard Pryor album.
Yeah. My dad loved Richard Pryor. So,
yeah, who didn't? He's amazing.
I enjoyed the comedic side of what the show is about.
I mean, you never saw the blind black man who's a white supremacist. You ever saw that one?
No.
That was a great skit on Chappelle's show.
The
race draft. You don't know the race draft?
No.
Oh, it's such.
I need to go back and watch those
such
shows because
not every part of it is
sure.
Not, I mean, skit shows are really hard. You know,
I mean, Saturday Night Live doesn't win every week either, right?
Right. So. Right. Key and Peele, same thing. Some are just not that funny. But the creativity in a blind black man who's a white supremacist, it's like, I wish I was in that pitch room, right? Where somebody's like, all right, wait, we're going to do a white supremacist bit, only he's black and he's blind and he doesn't know that he's black, so he's a white supremacist. Like, that's amazing.
I mean, a lot of times comedy for a lot of, not, I don't want to speak for all comics, sometimes for comics can just be going out there and dropping F-bombs or cursing and just kind of like, that's, people are kind of chuckling, laugh. The hard part of comedy is what I think Chappelle does and what I think a lot of great comics do is, like you just mentioned about the suicide one, which was this in-depth, logical thought pattern that is funny at the end, but it has this like this road that gets there that you really have to pay attention to. So it's not an easy feat to make. It's easy to make people laugh by like pulling your shirt up over your head maybe, and people might go, oh, well, that's kind of funny. It's hard to make people laugh for an hour with constant thought-provoking humor. And that's what these guys do. And women.
I don't know exactly what's funny, but pulling your shirt up.
Well, you know
head,
what I mean. Like, well, sometimes I pull my shirt up before Lucas and he'll just start. I mean, Jonah, he'll start laughing. He's like two.
He's two.
Right.
He's two. Doug Gottlieb Show, Fox Sports Radio. Woody! Eric Wood joins us. Legendary Buffalo Bill. And, of course, he calls games for the Bills Radio Network, calls games on the ACC Network, and generally a pretty delightful fellow. What, are you having breakfast? Or no, I guess it's like lunchtime, late lunch.
Yeah, I mean, in Louisville, it's almost dinner time. It's 4:30, brother.
Is it 4? You know what? It's like dark and rainy here in Southern California. I didn't look up at the clock, and I've kind of lost all equilibrium for time of day. Joining us,
and you're not used to that out there.
No, I'm not. I don't exactly know what's going on. This liquid falling from the sky. Okay, let's start with the Bills. They get beaten by what I thought was a great football game last Monday. But the Bills matching up with the Titans. Did we miss on the Titans? Are they better than we thought? Are they just playing well right now? They getting healthy? Like, give me your assessment as a guy who saw the game, called the game, watched the game, and now watch the Titans have as good a week as you're going to have in the NFL.
Yeah, I mean, I think the Titans are a team that can beat anybody any week, especially if they get that run game going. And what's interesting to me, and you're right, that was a great game last week. You know, I called the games for the Bills. I played my whole career with the Buffalo Bills, so I root for them, obviously. But, man, what a football game. And, you know, not that we're on it, but stand by the decision at the end, and you ride and die with your best player, and that's Josh Allen. But this Tennessee Titans team, to me, what's interesting is defenses around the league are getting talent, getting their players to match up with the Kansas City Chiefs, the Buffalo Bills now, the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, these teams that have multiple wide receiver threats, athletic tight ends. And then you go and play a team with a 250-pound running back, and you're used to playing nickel defense, even against base, because of all the athleticism and the speed on all these offenses. And then you're really strung out when a team decides they want to run it down your throat. It kind of reminds me when everybody was gearing up in the AFC, how do we stop Gronk and Hernandez? We need athletic linebackers. We need bigger safeties that can cover. it kind of reminds me of that. And then you can find a team that gives you a mismatch, and that's what Tennessee did the last 2 weeks.
You mentioned what people are doing to the Kansas City Chiefs. So two high safeties and then man under, is that basically what everybody's doing?
Right, and they're not able to run the football. Like that, as a former offensive lineman, you go two high safeties against us, we're going to run the football down your throat, and they're just not able to do it. Last year in week 7 when the Chiefs played at Buffalo, Clyde Edwards-Helaire had 160-something yards when the Bills tried to play too high. Then they go to the playoffs, and the Bills try to bring some pressure, and Mahomes just lights them up. Well, Todd Bowles in the Super Bowl, the defensive coordinator for Tampa Bay, they blitz as much as anybody in the league, if not more, and they go into that game and just play too high, shell, a lot of man underneath, jam them as much as you can at the line of scrimmage, and they shut down that offense, and everybody's copying that blueprint, and they're going to have to find a way to beat it, and you beat it with the run game. That's the only way you can beat that defense, and they're just not able to run the football right now.
Eric Wood joining us on the Doug Gottlieb Show here on Fox Sports Radio. Okay, what about the Bengals? What were they able to do to slow down the Ravens?
Well, that's my hometown team, and I always joke that I was a Bengals fan my whole life, and they stunk. I get to the NFL, they make the playoffs 6 or 7 years, and I'm now playing in the longest playoff drought in all of pro sports. It's no longer the Bengals, so maybe a little bit of bad luck on my end, I guess. But offensively, the Bengals were able to light it up through the air, and I root for maybe no other rookie harder than Ja'Marr Chase after he was just crushed in the preseason. All this guy can't catch. Can't believe they drafted him in the top 10. And now unprecedented numbers through this first part of the season for a rookie, better than even Randy Moss. And then defensively, they were able to slow down Lamar Jackson. And when you're able to make them earn it all the way up and down the field, possession after possession, you're setting yourself up in a position where if you get a holding penalty here or there, they make one mistake, now they're punting the football back to you.
Do you think they can be competitive in the playoffs?
Man, it's tough for me to say. And my one reservation on the Bengals is when you have turnover, and this is Zach Taylor's second year there, I believe. When you have the turnover that they did and you're drafting for different systems, I played in that in Buffalo, 7 head coaches in 9 years, so I know this recipe. As the season goes on and guys start to get dinged up, you haven't drafted for long enough to your system to create the depth, and that's one thing that would scare me about this organization. But, I mean, I had Jordan Palmer, who works with many of the top quarterbacks in the NFL, especially the young guys. I had him on my podcast, and he talked about how Cincinnati would get a Super Bowl with Joe Burrow. He's that confident in that young man. And, I mean, it's hard to bet against Joe Burrow, man. That guy is a gamer.
What is it like in the locker room? And like you said, 7 head coaches in 9 years. When you got a head coach who doesn't seem to have the ability to make the proper decisions in terms of clock management like what's going on in Dallas.
Yeah, that's interesting because I don't feel like I ever really played under a coach like that. Like Sean McDermott, his first year as our head coach in Buffalo, the year we broke the playoff drought, like there was times where he gets scrutinized, and it's easy to do with a young coach. Like, oh, he doesn't have the experience, and some of his decisions were questioned. Now, Sean McDermott was kind of on the front end of analytics, so he was trusting those decisions, I would assume. But with Mike McCarthy, like this is a guy that's coached a ton of football. I don't know. And a lot of times, it's the head coach that will take all the blame for it, and he's the one making the final decisions. But a lot of times, when it comes to challenges, when it comes to game clock management, like they have so much on their plate that that's not always their duty. It'd be interesting to me to know if he's trusting someone in those situations. And if so, he's out the window now.
Do you, by the way, last night played, and you played a lot of snow games, but were you at all impressed? They're playing on grass, and I know that the grass is way better. I know there's sand underneath, but there was no dirt on any of those guys last night in a complete monsoon.
Right, yeah. How about that? Is there even dirt underneath that grass? What's it growing on? But, no, that's a heck of a field that they're playing on out west. But, yeah, it was interesting because it was kind of sloppy early, and then Wentz ended up being able to put a pretty good game together, and you would think with the Shanahan run game, that anytime you have a game that's adverse conditions, you're forced to run the football, it'd be them that would be able to win the football game. So, yeah, I played in plenty of those crappy weather games. And, man, I'll tell you what, cold and rainy is way worse than snow.
Okay, so the worst weather you played, but cold and windy is the worst, right? That's just, it gets into your bones. There's nothing you can do.
Cold, windy, rainy.
Okay, what's the worst? 9 years in Buffalo, you've seen it all. What's the worst?
Oh, man, that's a great question. We played at New England one time, and it's always those games that are like 35, so it doesn't turn to snow, and it's just pouring down rain the entire time. And I want to say it was the Deflategate game where we played against Jacoby Brissett, but I could be wrong on that one, but that was a terrible one. I mean, it ended up being one of the more fun ones, but there, like, a little bit of snow is kind of fun to play in. You don't get that wet. You know, it's a novelty. It looks pretty on TV. But when we played the Colts in 2017, and when we went into the locker room after pregame warmups, and there's maybe an inch of snow out there, and we came out, and there was a foot.
Yeah.
That was a lot to man, just especially for a center. My first shotgun snap of the game clipped the snow that was behind me and fumbled to the ground. So now every time we run shotgun, I have to clear out like a 4-foot radius around me to A, get my footing, and then B, make sure that the snap is going to clear the snow behind me.
That had to be just the weirdest possible experience, just an incredibly weird experience. Okay, you look at the Browns. They got all kinds of issues with their offensive line, all kinds of issues with injuries, right? Just tons and tons of injuries. Now, Baker himself is hurt. But how big an issue is Baker? Can we tell how big an issue Baker is considering the litany of other injuries they have?
That's a great question, and your boy Coward asked me that last week too. And I've always been a Baker Mayfield fan. I mean, I think he brings some confidence about him. I love his quick release. I think he's got a really live arm, but he's been surrounded by a lot of talent up there in Cleveland, and they just haven't got over the hump. And, man, when you look at that roster on paper, and maybe some of it doesn't fit. Maybe Odell Beckham Jr. doesn't quite fit in their system, or maybe some of these defensive pieces don't quite fit. But regardless, when you look at this defense, this offense on paper, I mean, to have Jadeveon Clowney and Myles Garrett rushing the passer, and all the weapons that they have on offense, I mean, this team should be better. And when you look at NFL football teams, a lot of that goes back to the quarterback. It's the most important position in sports. A good quarterback play can make a whole organization look better than it probably should, and bad quarterback play can amplify it as well. And I'm not saying it's all been bad from Baker, but I don't know that he's amplifying that roster that they have up there.
That's a great way, amplifying the roster. That's an excellent way. I'm going to steal that.
Well, I mean, I played against Tom Brady 16 times, 18 times. There was countless times, if you went 22 players, you looked at our offensive and defensive starters against theirs, you'd probably take 15 of our guys over theirs, except the quarterback, and he beats us almost every time. You know, it's like, great quarterback play can make up for a lot of things.
It hides a lot of weaknesses. It makes you look like a better coach. There's no question about it. So does good center play.
No doubt.
Just be honest. Good center play covers up a lot of the quarterback stuff as well.
I don't know about that, but I will say this. If you got bad center play, you know it quick. If you got a guy that can't put accurate snaps out there, or he's getting blown up, it's very easy to see because it's right in front of the quarterback where everyone's watching.
He's got good hair. He's got a good podcast, and he's good on radio and TV. He's Eric Wood. Woody, thanks for joining us.
Oh, my pleasure. Really appreciate it, Doug.
All right. Woody also likes the ponies. I know that because Breeders' Cup last year was in Kentucky. This year it's in San Diego.
Be sure to catch live editions of the Doug Gottlieb Show weekdays at 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific, on Fox Sports Radio and the iHeartRadio app.
What up, Doug Gottlieb Show? Fox Sports Radio. Hope you're having a great day. Doug Gottlieb Show, broadcast live from Southern California. I love going over scores with my kid. So my son's 12. He's got a couple fantasy teams. One that he's like second place in the league, and he doesn't remember his password to get in and actually change it. and he beat me with that team without adjusting anything, and it's pretty frustrating. But anyway, so I watch and record all of the games, and yesterday we had basketball games early, and I got a chance to watch all the afternoon games and then the Sunday night game as well and go back and watch the early games. So we're rolling out of the gym. We had a 8 a.m., which, of course, is 11 on the east, so none of the games started then at 9:50, and 11:40, then he was done. So we saw the end of the first game. So anyway, pop up my phone. All right, tell me the scores. I love when he does that. Right? Like, the best thing a little boy can say to his dad is, "Dad, tell me the scores." So I start kind of running through them, and I was like, well, you know, the Packers are up on the football team. Patriots are crushing the Jets. Of course they are. Giants, Panthers. Wow, how'd that happen? Tennessee and the Chiefs. Oh my gosh, crazy. Oh, hey, the Bengals are beating the... What? The Bengals are beating the Ravens. Yeah, that happened. And it wasn't like they won on a crazy play or a field goal. Or it's like, you know, I mean, if they make this field goal, things are like, it was a no-doubter. It's a tie game at half. Excuse me, it was 13-10 and a half. My bad. 13-10 and a half. And the Bengals scored 28 in the second half and just lambasted the Baltimore Ravens. The Ravens, who had set the world on fire, and they had a week like the Tennessee Titans going back to last week, right? One on Monday Night Football, come from behind win. Lamar Jackson was great. Then they played the Chargers at home. Chargers are a hot team. They kicked the crap out of the Chargers. Now, and everybody's... Where were they on your... Byer, do you have a team pyramid or only the MVP pyramid?
Only an MVP pyramid.
Was Lamar Jackson number one in your MVP pyramid?
No, not last week. It was Kyler Murray.
Kyler Murray was still probably... We'll see how... You know, he's still probably... We'll see until next week what happens. But, I mean, they end up having to pull Lamar Jackson, right? Which is smart. What's the point? They didn't lose a fumble. They just couldn't move the football. The Bengals are just better. And if you think back, you go back a couple seasons ago, right? You go back two seasons ago. Do you guys know I did play-by-play for Compass? I did a Bengals-Saints game. I did play-by-play. I'd never done play-by-play for a football game ever in my life. I've only done it for a couple of basketball games. I'm a color analyst. I do the other side to it. But radio play-by-play. My first radio play-by-play was Cincinnati Bengals versus the New Orleans Saints. And it was in Cincinnati. And the Saints were so good and the Bengals were so bad, the Saints did not punt. And we were tracking, like, Cincinnati Bengals were the worst defense in the history of the league through, I think it was 15 weeks. They end up, you know, they're playing teams that didn't play their guys at the end of the year. So, but what's amazing is you go from 2 years ago to now. Yes, Ja'Marr Chase is incredible. Yes, Joe Burrow is amazing. But the defense is actually really, really good. They've completely rebuilt this thing. So I look at it and I'm like, I always ask analysts, and Byer's been here, Ramos has been here the entire time. When we're in the offseason, I'm always asking people, like, tell me who the team is that we should be talking about, but we don't talk about. And nobody mentioned the Bengals. And I was like, you know, because last year you got a young head coach. There was a lot of heat and there was talk of the players not buying in. And maybe he wasn't going to make it. He was actually, I believe, could be wrong, I think he was number one before the season on Bet Rivers Sportsbook on most likely to be fired. Future prop bets, Zach Taylor was the supposed to be the first coach fired. Now, look, they could very easily collapse. You get a bunch of injuries. But, I mean, at some point we have to go, like, it hasn't been a dream season. Joe Burrow was a shell of himself in the preseason. Ja'Marr Chase could not catch in the preseason. And we had no idea about their defense, and there was talk of Zach Taylor just not being good enough. And now look at him. Do I think they're the best team in the AFC? I do not, but do I respect? I mean, look, you got a couple good running backs. Mixon and P. Ryan in their Oklahoma backfield. You know, they have invested with draft picks in their offensive line to some limited success. And the defense is pretty good. And they're playing with great energy. And, you know, the truth is Joe Burrow is the deal. He has all of this stuff is made better and easier when it's not just that he's under a rookie contract, that he can actually play and make plays. Here's Zach Taylor on beginning to earn respect around the league.
We're starting to earn respect. We have a long ways to go. You know, just winning one road game against a divisional opponent, that's what you have to do if you want to compete in this league. We've got a long way to go, but I'm really proud of the collective team effort. I mean, this was a complete game today by all three phases.
All right, I want to get back to this in a second. First, though, we have breaking news. Dan Byers got it.
Breaking news from Fox Sports.
Doug, the Green Bay Packers have placed wide receiver Davante Adams on the reserve COVID list. Now, we don't know if Adams tested positive or was a close contact, but the Packers have that short week against Arizona on Thursday night. So Green Bay's top target, Aaron Rodgers' favorite receiver, Davante Adams, placed on the reserve COVID list.
And that's why probably you saw that Vegas line move from 3.5 to 4.5, right? And it'll probably be 5, 5.5. Now, remember, if he's vaccinated, and I believe the Packers are 100% vaccinated,
I don't know. I am actually looking at, Google. I was going to say efforting, but yes. I'm looking it up.
You can say Googling, it's okay.
Sorry, I'm still looking.
No, it's okay. I would guess he's vaccinated. And so the rules are, if you're vaccinated, you need 2 negative tests within 24 hours of each other in order to be cleared. Now, Eli, as you point out, it's really interesting with a short week, and he can't be around the team until he's cleared. So what I would guess would happen would be, I'm sure he's probably tested positive or whatever, so it goes down to tomorrow and then the next day, and you get down to really the last second. The difference, if he's not vaccinated, he's away from the team for 10 days. He's got no shot of playing this week. So that one's going to be interesting, right? And Davante Adams, by the way, usually misses a couple of games every year, doesn't he?
Yes, that is true. Yeah.
Like you can kind of set your watch to it.
Yeah, the Packers were one of the slower teams to reach the thresholds that the NFL wanted in the preseason. So that was a way to go. So I don't know if they ever did reach the 100%.
Yeah, so we don't know about Davante Adams, but we will know based upon if he's still being tested or if it's the automatic 10-day. That's the easiest way to find out if he is, in fact, vaccinated. Okay, we got that. What do you do if you have, by the way, Dan Byer has a fantasy football podcast. I want your flex. I mean, I guess it's Thursday, so that actually doesn't kill you. You wait till game time if you have him, but that's a tough one.
Alan Lazard would be a name that would pop up that a lot of people would, maybe want to grab. I think you'd also see an uptick in maybe the status of A.J. Dillon and even Robert Tonyan, who actually had a decent game against Washington yesterday. Those could be options.